The lawyers that you have just heard came from some 92 million miles away. This is just one of the many interesting signals that the amateur radio astronomer can receive. Today I've come to Rudgwick in Sussex to meet John Smiths, who for more than 30 years has been one of the country's leading amateur astronomers. Well, John, could you start by telling me exactly the type of work that an amateur can undertake?
There are a number of interesting projects that amateurs can carry out. One of the more important ones is observing the signals coming from the sun and record both the background level and the bursts and storms that occur. If on a regular basis, it would be possible to contribute to a national observing program of radio observations. I have here an example of noise and signals coming from the sun being received at this moment.
The gift you can hear at the moment is generated by the receiver, and now I'm going to scan the dish across the sun.
Running.
The noise in here at the moment is coming from the receiver. As the dish scans across the sun, you should hear an increase of noise.
Example of recordings made at two separate frequencies separated by 1.2 megahertz, corresponding to two different levels in the solar atmosphere of 750 kilometers. By making accurate measurements of timings, it's possible to calculate the radial velocities of these events. There are the two channels, 181 megahertz and 182 megahertz. There's a nice burst that comes through on both channels, which I can now use to calculate the radial velocity. Right, I'm now telling the computer to 75, which bit of the record to analyze, and it's now come up with an answer of an output radial speed of 5,773 kilometers per second.
The record made with a phase switch interferometer of the flux level received from the sun today, that corresponding to about 4 hours of record.
Couple of the computer-aided recording taken at high speed, showing minute detail of the structure of the flare over a period of 10 seconds. As can be seen, there are some interesting regular features contained within the burst.
Of a contour map made of the northern Milky Way using the dish, setting it at different declination feet today, separated by 2.5 degrees, and allowing it to scan round the whole sky over 24 hours. Contour map here, showing the centre of our galaxy here, the Cygnus region of the Milky Way, the Orion section of the Milky Way. These curves here each represent 24 hours of observation and are typical of many days of observation. Being here at the centre of our galaxy, coming up through Cygnus here and down through the Orion arm here.
Now could you tell me, is it possible for the amateur to detect pulsars?
Theoretically, it's possible with a dish this size that the signals from the pulse, from the most alpha pulsars, are very small, less than 1 Jansky, or 10 to the minus 26
watts per cycle per second per square meter. The way I'm trying to do it here is by summing 16 times per revolution, for many revolutions, into 16 boxes, and then deducting the total noise, leaving the result of histogram. The true zero of this histogram is way, way below floor level, and here are the 16 boxes, and one of them does show a pulse, but whether this is real or not, I have yet to find out.
This all sounds very impressive, but it clearly requires a great deal of space for aerials and relatively complicated equipment. Is there anything simpler that the amateur can do to get started in this field?
Yes, a very simple and fairly inexpensive project is to try and pick up a phenomenon known as whistlers. The receiver needs only to be an audio amplifier connected to a fairly long single wire aerial. Typical example here, just three transistors, long wire aerial, and a filter. A filter can be a problem because nowadays it's very difficult to filter out mains harmonics picked up from overhead power lines, etc. A whistler occurs when, say, we get a lightning flash in the southern hemisphere, and the signal from that travels southwards and is deflected by the Earth's magnetic field to pass through the Van Allen radiation belt and is directed back towards the Earth and arrives at the same latitude but in the northern hemisphere. And in its passage through the Van Allen radiation belt, it is spread out in frequency, so the higher frequencies arrive first and the lower frequencies are delayed. So listening with a pair of headphones, you'll probably hear something that goes phew. Now, if the lightning flash takes place in the northern hemisphere, the signal will travel out to the southern hemisphere, same latitude as south, reflect it and come back again and further disperse, so the signal arriving back sounds rather like this. It's possible to detect, sometimes to detect solar flares by observing ionospheric effects using long-wave receivers. Such information can be useful to the solar observational program.
See the signals from radio sources. I assume from the size of aerials associated with radio astronomy that these signals that we receive are very weak.
That's so. If we could take all the energy collected from outside the solar system by all radio telescopes since radio telescopes have been built, and whether these energies have been used or not, well, that all that energy put together since the beginning of radio astronomy to date would produce enough energy to do that. I repeat that, to do that. Or put another way, taking one of the most powerful sources in radio sources, the Crab Nebula, here's a record made on the 30-foot dish of the Crab Nebula. Now, if I could point that dish at the Crab Nebula 24 hours a day, take the energy into a heat converter inside a box, this absolute perfect thermal insulator, and then put in with that a cup of water, after 500,000 million years, there's enough heat there to brew a cup of tea, or at least there would be if the Crab Nebula could existed for that length of time.
Radio telescopes. Could you tell me about the different types of systems as an amateur can build?
Well, probably one of the simplest systems is to use a communications type receiver connected to a Yagi aerial, and the output from the detector going to a FM recorder. This can be used to detect signals coming from the disturbed sun, solar bursts and solar storms, and possible other projects such as meteor reflections.
Well, what's wrong with a simple system like that?
One of the greatest problems is drift, and this can be improved by having a simple radiometer like this, where the input receiver can be switched either to the aerial or to a reference noise source. This can be done manually, although very rarely ever done these days. But again,
Other improvements are the inclusion of additional RF amplifier, filters to keep out unwanted interference. Filtering is really the name of the game with radio telescopes. Communication receiver, and for detecting, say, solar noise, an integrating circuit to, in effect, smooth out a lot of the random variations due to noise, up, of course, going to a pen recorder. Now,
Peter King has used this aerial as a radiometer and also in a Dickey system. It has been used in conjunction with another aerial as part of a phase switch system. This demonstrates how a small radio telescope can be used in a confined location.
How often does the Dickey system improve on that?
So the Dickey system really automates this simple comparator system. The receiver is switched between the aerial and a reference resistor at a fairly rapid rate. Any good quality resistor matched to the system will produce noise directly proportional to its temperature, and this is a fundamental relationship that can be calculated. The signal from the means that you get what you're getting going into the receiver at one moment is the signal plus the receiver noise, next moment just the reference noise plus the receiver noise, but at the output end we reverse the polarity of the detector instead with the switching operation of this end. So at one moment, coming out of here, we have the signal plus noise. The next moment, because you reverse the polarity, you've got the reference, you've got minus the reference noise and minus the receiver noise. And so over the whole cycle, the noise cancels out, but leaves you with the difference between the reference and the signal. Mind you, due to the statistical nature of noise, it has to be done over a long period to, in other words, take an average of the signal, again using a time constant circuit here before it goes into the pin recorder.
Now, I know that several members have built drift interferometers. Could you just basically say how they work, please?
Prove the resolving power of a radio telescope by having a pair of aerials instead of a large dish. The aerials are separated on an east-west baseline, as shown here, the two aerials, each with their own head amplifiers to amplify the signal before noise from the feeder cable is added. The two signals are summed at the exact center point and fed into the receiver and amplified in the normal way with a time constant in the output. When the source is on the meridian, the two signals will arrive, the signals through the two aerials arrive in step and will add together. When the Earth is rotated so that you have a quarter of a wavelength, longer length, half length into one area, and quarter of a wavelength shorter to the other, the two signals at the center point are out of phase and cancel out. A bit later, wave number one falls in step in one area, falls into step with wave number two in the other area, so the two signals add again. So the output within the polar diagram of each individual aerial oscillates between zero and the maximum, producing what is what's known as a fringe pattern. And the width of the fringe is inversely proportional to the separation of the two aerials.
Now, can you tell me how the phase switch interferometer improves over that system?
Well, phase switch interferometer combines the advantage of the drift interferometer and the Dickey system. In this case, each time the signal's coming through the two aerials as before, but the signal from one aerial is continually reversed by adding an extra half wavelength of feeder here. That means at this point, one moment you've got signal plus noise coming out of the receiver here, plus the signal and noise from the other one. The next moment you've got this reversed so that the two signals cancel out, leaving with the noise, but you've also reversed the output at the detector. So
So over a whole cycle, you're getting twice the signal, in other words, for two aerials, plus the noise. Next moment, the signals cancel out, so you've got minus the noise. So over the whole cycle, you've got twice the signal plus noise, minus noise over two, leaving you with just an average equivalent to the signal to one aerial. Now, after the Earth has rotated a bit, so these two aerials are now out of step, everything's reversed. So what happens in this case is that the output is reversed at the detector. So the fringe pattern produced oscillates either side of zero. In other words, you're only showing the fringe components with effectively with the DC component due to the noise cancelled out. Now this all seems very complicated. Could you tell me, is it possible to purchase any of this equipment?
Via commercially DC amplifiers, low frequency amplifiers, the IF amplifiers, but I think it's best to build the switching circuit and the RF amplifiers oneself.
Well, could you give me some idea of the level of ability that's required to build a receiver?
A television set using standard textbooks, not in a kit, one should be able to build a radio telescope. The complexity of building a radio telescope is roughly equivalent, say, to building an optical telescope, including grinding one's own mirror.
Let me have a look at some of this equipment.
Sides back at the receiver, it will enter the frequency changer as shown in the manual in this circuit diagram. Signal entering here, and frequency is changed to a more convenient value of about 29 megahertz, and this then goes out to the next stage of the receiver. The details of that are the signal comes in here into one stage of RF amplification. Here is the local oscillator, and here is the mixer that converts the signal to the low, to the intermediate frequency, or IF frequency. It then leaves that to a filter here, and I'm pressing put in to restrict the bandwidth to avoid signals, unwanted signals coming from, say, police transmissions, emergency services, general communications, or even Radio Moscow. Details of that are... let's unscrew that. Are three very loosely coupled tuned circuits and one transistor to make up for some of the loss in this circuit. That then passes on to the main IF amplifier, where the overall gain is about 10 million, or about 70 decibels. Details here, they have signal comes in to two transistors connected in cascode, to another tube, and then a single transistor on its own through the detector, which is here. Screening is of utmost importance. What I found, the best way I found of constructing these things is put everything inside the lid so that when you remove it from the box, everything's accessible. And to construct the circuit first and then put the screens in afterwards. The signal from the detector comes to this general purpose box containing low frequency amplifier, synchronous detector, DC amplifier to drive the pin recorder, and the square wave generator for operating the Dickey switch or the phase switch. Details of that, here we have the LF amplifier. This is the integrating circuit capacitor here, which tends to smooth out the signal to make it easier to detect the signal, separate the signal from the receiver noise. Square wave generator here, and the DC amplifier is there. Adjustment here for balancing the pin recorder, adjusting the time constant, of the output and the gain of the system. Using a DT system or phase switch system is necessary to be able to switch between the signal and the reference, in the case of the DT system, or in the case of the phase switch interferometer, to insert and remove a quarter wavelength of coaxial cable. This is done when used as a phase switch system. The two aerials come in onto these two connectors here. One goes straight through to the output to the receiver. The other one is switched either to go straight through or to be diverted through this extra half wavelength loop of cable. That is done using crystal diodes located there and there. These components here are for decoupling to prevent signals escaping through wherever they are and causing a nuisance. This switch here enables one to reverse the polarity of the switching for testing purposes, also to switch it solidly one way or the other. When alternatively, one can remove this and put in a reference source here to a reference resistor here to so that it will act as a Dickey system.
I think I shall have to take your word for that. But does one need a lot of expensive equipment to set up the equipment initially?
To have very expensive equipment like wobulators and calibrated signal generators and so on. But it is possible to get away with very simple equipment like a normal sort of domestic multi-purpose meter like that, and a simple signal generator like that, which contains one transistor, which can be calibrated using a very simple lecture wire. This is described in the manual. A very important piece of equipment is a calibrated noise diode, for example, this. This provides a fundamental calibration of the system.
Seems quite straightforward. Could you possibly show me how you measured the noise figure that you mentioned?
Noise diode is connected to the front end of the system, like this, and the level is adjusted until the output of the receiver is doubled, which then means that the noise produced by the diode is equal to the receiver noise. To start off by setting the sensitivity of a meter connected to the detector to a convenient value, in this case 100 microamps, I now increase the noise coming from the diode until that level is doubled. 200 microamps, and the diode current is about 2 milliamps. This corresponds to a noise figure of about 2. In other words, the sensitivity of the receiver is limited to something approaching twice the minimum possible detectable level. Now, one can optimize the system by continually measuring these measurements, which is very time consuming, and there are easier ways of doing this. One is to modulate the noise diode signal, and you can then hear it if you monitor it on a loudspeaker and adjust accordingly. Here I'm connecting an audio amplifier to the output and changing the noise diode to the AC modulated, and as I increase the signal, I can hear the modulated noise appearing. In this case, the typical noise diode current is about 2 milliamps. Now, if I adjust the various components on the system, you can hear that the level that does increases and decreases. Now, by definition, the louder I can get that buzz, the better the noise figure of the system.
An alternative method is to use an oscilloscope. A very useful way of estimating the performance of the system is to modulate the noise source. In my case, I supply the diode with a 50 cycle supply and display the output on the oscilloscope, where a 50 cycle signal is fed to the X plate. I'm now going to increase the signal coming from the noise diode. And the meter measuring the diode current, which can, as you can select it from either 500 microamps, 5 milliamps, or 58 milliamps as required. This selects the appropriate diode as I have a number on around the system, and I'm now increasing the noise diode current to the 2 milliamps required for the test.
Right.
As a rough guide, it is useful to work with about 1 milliamp for setting up purposes. And what is happening here is this part of the trace shows just the noise from the receiver only, and this is the sum of the noise from the receiver and the noise diode. If I then go start making adjustments on the equipment, you can see how that varies, and the object is to get the largest ratio of that to that. This is all described in the manual.
Right, well, before we leave the area of equipment, could you just show me some other forms of amateur construction?
This is a very low frequency receiver built by Peter King. Note that it uses some integrated circuits. This is Peter's 110 megahertz receiver, also using integrated circuits. And here is his output signal processing equipment.
Tell me how the outputs from radio telescopes are displayed.
Usually displayed on a pen recorder, rather like this one here, illustrating the signals received from the sun's bay.
Are there any other more modern means of recording the output from radio telescopes?
The modern tendency is to convert the data into digital form and store in a computer, as is done on this BBC, the macro computer. This display here shows a transit across the Milky Way and also across the radio source Cygnus A.
Which is the best method to use then?
Well, there are advantages in both methods. The pen recorder produces a permanent record. In case of a computer, it's possible to have a look at the data first and see whether it's worth saving, thereby avoiding the use of a lot of paper if the results happen to be meaningless. Also, the computer can be used to reject a lot of unwanted interference. Another advantage of using a computer is that one can use image enhancing programs, such as a Fourier transform process, to extract data that is otherwise cannot be seen on a pen recorder.
Example, a deep space observation.
Here some recordings made with a spectrum computer with an analog to digital converter added, using a 210 meter baseline with a 30 foot dish and a 100 foot long parabolic cylinder. Top one here shows fringes coming from 3 feet to a certain pole. The one down here shows fringes coming from Hercules A.
This is the image close, I think.
Well, here's an example of using Fourier transform. This is the original recording. The fringes are barely visible, but after running through a Fourier transform program, fringes here from 3C123 and 3C135. Because of the relatively short baseline set by professional standards, there's confusion between the two, which produces these fringes in the middle.
Well, really, I suppose very few people would have such a good sight as this. Could you tell me what are the points of this pavement?
Well, I'm very lucky to be able to get this field that is long and narrow and runs east-west, so that I could use several aerials to make up the spherometer system. Also, it is a reasonable distance from any main road from the point of view of ignition, car ignition.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I can see you've made this area yourself. Can you tell me, does this type of construction make a very efficient type of aerial?
Yes, it is fairly efficient. It's a parabolic cylinder, constructed to an accuracy of a tenth of a wavelength, which is quite adequate for the purpose. It is a lot cheaper and simpler to build than a Yardley type aerial, and certainly a lot less expensive. The aerial consists of a reflecting surface, and consisting of aluminium wires which focus the incoming waves onto the aerial elements here, which are four half-wave dipoles coupled together with these matching stubs, and the signal is taken off the center matching stub there.
Now, I understand that this is one of the aerials that you use for solar observation. Could you explain a bit to me about it, please?
Yes, it forms with the other aerial a phase-switch interferometer and has been observing the sun for 30 years on a continuous basis, which records both a quiet sun and noise storms. The baseline is about 100 meters.
Now, could you explain to me a bit about the dipoles, please?
Yes, it consists of four elements. Each element is half a wavelength long, which means that each end has a high impedance, so they're matched to each other through these quarter wave stubs, and the centre quarter wave stub is also additionally used as a transformer down to 300 ohms. It goes into a ballon, which also transforms down to 75 ohms into the feeder, which goes into a head amplifier here, which amplifies the signal by about 20 decibels, and then the signal goes by this cable up through the center shed and the main receiver.
Now, could you tell me, how easy is it to build an aerial for a radio telescope?
Well, this aerial here is one of a pair built for a phase switch interferometer. The two aerials took an afternoon to build. They are what is known as corner reflectors, where you have a flat reflecting surface here and here, which focuses the incoming signals onto this full-wave dipole here. Again, the matching system is as the other aerial I've already shown, with a quarter-wave stub here attached to a half-wave length ballon, and the signal from there goes into a head amplifier there, as you can see, by a simple soda water bottle, and then and from there away up to the main receiver. The whole aerial can be folded up very easily just by disconnecting these joints here and here, and the two can be transported on the roof rack of a car.
Can you tell me if any results have been obtained using this aerial?
Yes, it has been taken to astronomy conventions, and where it has picked up signals from the Sun, from the sources of Cygnus A, Cassiopeia A, the Crab Nebula, the supernova remnant in Virgo A, and also in Hercules. It has also been used for making fast recordings of the Sun.
An aerial like this can be constructed in about a couple of weekends. Can you tell me how long the rest of it takes?
It takes, the aerials, as you say, took a couple of weekends to build. The receivers took about 100 hours of actual construction time.
Yes. And then how long does it take to get going?
It takes about twice as long to get the system working. I usually tell people X is the time to build the aerial, 10X is the time to build the receiver, and 30X is the time to get it working.
Right. And why would you have built this type of dish rather than a dish?
You see, not really large enough to require making it in the form of a dish. Dish don't mean really necessary if it is more than 5 wavelengths in diameter.
Thanks for showing me your equipment, John. Well, I think you can appreciate that building a radio telescope is no easy task, and I know that it took John Smith several years of experiment before he got his equipment to work properly. I'm sure if you do try it and you do succeed, you'll find it a very rewarding and absorbing hobby.